Be free or die. We're the SpyFi guys, and this is Harriet. Hello and welcome back to the SpyFi guys, where we cover spy fact, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And today we have a milestone episode. For the first time, we are leaving the 20th/21st centuries and going to the American Civil War period.
That's a good point. What's the earliest that we've done? Was it all just been World War II? Did we do anything for World War I?
Were you about to say it? I don't want to cut you off.
I completely forgot what it was called.
Sergeant Stubby. That was World War I.
Yeah, not that. I was thinking the Irish one.
Michael Collins.
What years of those could take place?
That was the 1920s, but this movie also reminded me of Michael Collins.
Okay, all right.
So we've done some old ones, but this is the oldest so far.
Yes. So, do you want to start us off with our synopsis from IMDb?
Yes. So this movie is called Harriet. The extraordinary tale of Harriet Tubman's escape from slavery and transformation into one of America's greatest heroes, whose courage, ingenuity, and tenacity freed hundreds of slaves and changed the course of history. And before we get started, I do have a quick story that I wanted to share with you.
Okay.
It is not my story. It is my brother's story. He was sitting in his workplace lunchroom with three men, all of whom were white, one of whom was, in fairness, not born in the United States. He was born in Ecuador.
All right.
But the news came on and they were talking about the effort to put Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill instead of Andrew Jackson. Okay. None of the three of them knew who Harriet Tubman was.
Oh, no. Like, all right, the guy who was born, you said Ecuador?
Yeah, he gets
That's
a pass.
That's fair. Yeah, no.
One of them made an attempt. He was like, was she the one who wouldn't stand up at the back of the bus?
Oh, no.
So I guess what I'm getting at is this episode and movie are sorely needed.
Fair enough. Yes, no, definitely.
All right, so let's jump right in. One thing I liked about the opening credits is it's that great Civil War era music that I really like. And we meet Minty.
Yeah, that threw me off.
And they really stick with Minty. She goes by it through most of the movie.
No, I'd say about a third of the way in is when she changes
her name. Yeah. Yes, but people keep calling her Minty consistently through to the end. So she is living in Maryland in 1849, which I thought the fact that it was in Maryland is interesting because Maryland is not Mississippi. It's not Alabama. It's not the Deep South.
Right.
You know?
But it is still south of the Mason-Dixon line.
That's right. It's still considered the South. And having lived in Maryland, it is weird to think that this was happening in a place where I had lived. Mm-hmm. So Minty is a slave who experiences what she calls spells, which the movie gives the impression it's like precognitive dreams, like Dream Girl of the Legion of Superheroes.
I mean, if you really want to get into it, it makes it seem like she's receiving messages from God. And that's what she believes.
Yes, that is something she believed, and that is true. So we meet her, and she and her husband are trying to use a legal method to get her free by basically using a will that was used by her previous owner to try to get her to be released so that they can live together and raise a family in freedom. I didn't really feel the need to go into all of the legalese because I didn't even understand it.
Oh, I mean, so it's basically current owner's father made a promise that Minty's mother was 45, that she and all her children would be freed. And she was like 57 by this point. So it's been 12 years after that. And they're still slaves.
That's right. And by the way, something I should mention, this movie does have racial slurs in it. So if that's something that you are sensitive to, obviously we won't be repeating them on this podcast.
No, we will not.
But the movie does contain it. So if that's something you're sensitive to, please keep that in mind. I do think it's interesting that a PG-13 movie will have those. Because to me,
PG-13? Really?
That's right. Wow. It's PG-13. There's also no blood.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
This guy is a real dick. He says to Harriet, "You belong to me for life," which I feel like if this were a different movie, she could be like, "As you wish," and then shoots him.
I mean, we'll get to it. So what happens next is that she basically, she does. She prays for her master's death.
Which is interesting because earlier a preacher is preaching what they call obedience, which is not to try to run away or not to try to mess with anything, which I thought was interesting And that's where the parallels to Michael Collins comes back.
Oh?
Because if you're living in a situation like that, it's an interesting moral question, I feel. Because if you try to resist the system, you and your family could be put at risk, just like Michael Collins was. If they had just waited 20 years, who knows what could have happened during those 20 years, but slavery would have ended one way or the other.
They could have also died in those 20 years.
And also 20 years is a long time to be in that situation. You wouldn't want to be in that situation even one day, let alone 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay, but yes, she does pray that he dies. And
the next scene, he's dead.
Wait, was it the next scene? I thought it was a little bit later.
Well, okay, so first of all, we also meet the
son.
So the son, Gideon, who is an asshole. That's just my notes. Gideon talks to her. He's an asshole.
My note is, Gideon is an asshole and his hair looks terrible.
Okay, glad we're on the same.
So Gideon wants to get rid of Harriet because he seems to have mixed feelings about Harriet.
Yeah.
It's like a love-hate relationship.
Mm.
But she decides to escape before he can.
Well, not only that, it was also, so her master, Edward, the father, died, and Gideon puts up a sign that he's, like, stating that he's intending to sell Harriet.
Right. She'll be separated from her family, including her husband, John, who is free.
Yep. And her father, who's also free.
Yeah, her father, who's played by one of the cops from The Wire, which I appreciated.
Okay. So she has another spell about her running away and realizes that she needs to run. So she goes to find John and
she tries to get him to come and he won't. So she tells
other way around.
Oh, sorry.
John says that he's coming with her, but she says no.
Cause it's too dangerous. Yeah.
And also as a freed man, he could lose his freedom is what she says.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little bit later, because I had questions about that. So she leaves, and she communicates to her mother that she's leaving by singing, like, a farewell song across the field, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then she makes a break for it, and then there's a scene where John comes to the house and meets Gideon. And then Gideon, like, beats him up and is like, where'd Harriet go? So this confused me. I was like, why is John even being around?
So he did say he'd meet her at the gate.
Oh, so he didn't know she was already gone.
No.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So he thought he was still going to run with her, but she just went on her own. So he's waiting around, and then Gideon finds him and beats the crap out of him.
Yep, but it doesn't work. So Harriet's out. She hits some friends. She sees her dad. She sees the Reverend from before.
Well, so the dad tells her to go to the Reverend and gives her a code phrase. Hey, spy stuff.
Yeah, see, there is spy stuff, which is interesting because she's like, I don't know if we can trust the Reverend, given that he was just preaching obedience earlier. But he's like, you got to trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. So she's making a break for it. They got dogs after her. She runs through an open field and eventually gets surrounded on a bridge.
Reverend Green told her to go to, like, how to get to Wilmington, basically, and who to find there.
Yep. The scene on the bridge, Gideon says, I won't hurt you too bad. And I was like, dude, that is the wrong thing to say. Even if she was going to believe him, which I highly doubt she would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she decides, all right, I'm going to just, jump the bridge and land in the water.
I feel like I've seen that in other movies, but nothing is coming to mind right now. It did happen in Squid Game. Indiana Jones too, yeah. She survives, and she has what looks like a doll head. And this confused me, because she has like this little head. Do you remember what the deal with it is?
Yeah, no, that's a carving. So her father was a woodworker.
Okay.
And he gave it to her. It's a carving of his head. So that he'd always be with her.
Was that in the conversation where he was like telling her? I think I might have been writing and not looking at it when that happened.
That's when that happened. The dogs and men are still looking for her in the river when she washed up on a riverbank further down and sees a nearby hay wagon and hides in it. And like after a while, the wagon driver, I don't know if he, I wasn't clear if he knew she was there the whole time and was just getting her out, like brought her long enough, or he only just figured out and told her to get out.
My speculation is that he knew she was there the whole time and was willing to let her stay for a while until it became too dangerous for him. Reminded me of like hiding people in like Nazi Germany, where it's like, I'll hide you a little bit, but not for too long because I have to worry about myself.
Or like getting people across the Berlin Wall is what I thought of. Yeah.
This also made me think of Red Sea Diving Resort, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of parallels.
Especially
there.
With Moses.
Yeah, but no Chris Evans superhero this time.
sad. Well, no, actually, no, we don't need it. We don't need Chris Evans here, to be fair. No, we've got our own superhero.
Harriet's got
it
under
control. Yeah.
Okay, so she eventually makes it to Philadelphia, a city that I'm quite a fan of.
Well, so, I mean, we can talk about, she has a step in between, goes to Wilmington, finds Garrett, collapses. Skipped over a big moment here, which I thought was really important to the movie, is she collapses basically once she gets to Wilmington. He puts her in a bed and takes her to the Pennsylvania border and gives her the choice. I can take you across the border or you can walk to your freedom.
Oh,
and that was
I
a big moment.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good call bringing that up.
So he also tells her to go to to Philadelphia to find the Pennsylvania Anti-Slavery Society and ask for William Still and gives her a photo of him.
Yeah, did you recognize William Still, Leslie Odom?
Of course I did. Yes, he's Aaron Burr, sir.
Yeah, he's a very distinctive face. Yeah. But then I looked at all the movies he was in, and none of them jumped to mind. I guess Hamilton was the one that I knew him from.
Hmm. What else is he in recently?
Something else about him is that he's in Arch Street, which I recognize. That's a famous street in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a show. I was like,
no, the Arch Street show. All right, let's see. He was in this movie called One Night in Miami, Murder on the Orient Express, that I have seen.
I have not yet. I need to.
Red Tails, which I did not see.
Oh, right. He's in Red Tails. He's so. If you've not seen Red Tails, you should. It's very good.
I do like war movies.
You would really love Red Tails, I think.
Right.
But
so anyway,
for this movie.
So William tells her his whole backstory, and they discuss the idea of getting her a new name, like a free name, like Malcolm X would approve.
First of all, we find out what her full name is, which is Araminta Ross Tubman.
Mm-hmm.
We also find out that apparently it was 100 miles that she went, like all by herself.
100 miles she walked, except for that cart ride.
Wow, yeah. For her new name, she picks her mother's name, which is Harriet, and her husband's last name, which is Tubman.
So there you go.
We also find out that apparently, like, because so William Still is like taking a record, keeping a record of like slave histories of like all of the slaves who've come through Philly. And so he's like getting her backstory. And we find out that when she was younger, she got hit in the head and now has these spells or vision. When he's taking note of this, he writes down possible brain damage.
That's correct.
Yeah. But he goes and brings her to Marie Buchanan, who runs basically a boarding house.
That's right. And she's played by Janelle Monáe from SNL, among other things.
That's your go-to reference for Janelle Monáe?
Well, let me look on IMDb because
she's a singer, first of all.
Well, she was also in Hidden Figures.
Yes, that too.
And she was the star of Antebellum, which is a movie
I did not see. No.
But I recognize the name.
Yeah.
But mostly from SNL. That's what I think.
Okay.
So she's like, here you can make your own money and you can live your own life. Mm-hmm. There's a part where they get changed and we show Harriet's scarred back.
Yeah.
So this is something I want to talk to you about. It's the scarred back, which is, I don't watch a lot of like slavery movies for the same reason I don't watch a lot of Holocaust movies or 9/11 movies, which is, I heard the argument once that I think makes a lot of sense, which is that it feels scummy to make entertainment out of a major human tragedy like that. So on the one hand, I appreciated that this movie didn't get gratuitous with showing the darker side of slavery. I guess there's really just the one side of slavery.
There is not a lighter side, no.
No, there's not. But on the other hand, I also felt like maybe it would have benefited from it just to show how high the stakes really were, if that makes sense.
I mean, I feel like we get some of that. Well, and also one would hope that you also just don't need to be shown that.
Yeah, that's true.
You
it's
don't need
like,
to be reminded of that.
Yeah, I guess it's like having a World War II movie. You don't actually need to see a concentration camp to know what would happen if you got sent there. So I do think that the scars on the back was a good way to communicate it while keeping things at like a PG-13 level.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a good compromise.
And before she gets into the bath, they're like Marie is telling her, you know, that she needs a bath and she stinks. And Harriet very, you know, smartly points out that Marie, you know, was born a free woman and never needed a smell of stink of fear or like and running for her life. Marie apologizes, which that was, you know, a good touch there.
Yeah, Marie's like, well, when you're right, you're right. I got nothing to say in response. So they also have a discussion about John. And this is something I was confused about because they're like, you could send to John and why doesn't he just come meet her? Because he's free. Why can't he just go and leave? So I looked it up on our on our articles that we will use for Spy Fact versus Fiction at the end.
Yep.
And basically, they said in the South, even Maryland, mm-hmm. freed blacks still did not have freedom of movement.
Mm, yeah.
I speculate it's probably something like his employer was like, if you leave, I'm going to like take all your money or something.
Probably.
Like
I mean, and we kind of, well, didn't talk about this, but the employer of both the father and John is the uncle of Gideon.
Yeah. So that's a real nepotism kind of situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why John can't just come and meet her. And that's why she has to come get him out, I suppose.
Yeah. So Marie tells Harriet that the boatman, otherwise known as, wait, what were they known as? Blackjacks is what?
Yeah, that's right. That's what they said.
Go up and down the river. And so they would be able to get word to him and to her family. Marie goes and sets her up with a paying job as a maid the next day.
That's right. And we jump to a year later. There's mm-hmm. been no word from her husband, but she still is loyal to him, still wants to go see him or have him come to see her.
But her family and her husband know that she's safe, at least.
Right. But William is like, escaping has become more dangerous. Again, this is kind of like Nazi Germany, which is mm-hmm. really embarrassing because it's in the United States.
I mean, So he says that right now, federal marshals, judges, and slave owners are all working together to catch slaves.
Yeah, he's like, basically, it's not worth the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And this also is like Michael Collins, where you have people up top making decisions where to them, it's kind of like facts and figures and numbers. And it's in a very detached way.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Harriet sees it more as, these are my people. They're suffering. Why are we still talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting interpersonal conflict because they're on the same side.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, William does have a point that she can't even read. She can't even read a map. So how does she know? Will she know where to go? Harriet just counters, just don't doubt what I can do. Look how far I've come, basically.
Yeah, she made it this far. So Marie was going to help her out by giving her a dress and a gun.
Not just that. She also coaches her on how to act like a free woman.
Yeah, she's basically like, act like you've been there before, which is good advice for all of us.
But yeah, gives her a gun. Doesn't, like, there's a brief scene of showing her pointing it, but doesn't tell her how to clean it or anything else.
The idea is, I guess you point it at people and then they leave you alone, which is all Harriet really needs to do in the movie.
And then also she puts her in touch with a man who can get her, not quite forged papers, but someone else's freed papers. And she says, like, you know, not all of the details will match you exactly, but enough will. Hopefully they won't look too closely at it because there's less escaped slaves who are going back to the South.
Yeah, they're not going to be looking for the other direction, kind of like people going into East Germany.
Yep.
So this part is like the peak of the spyness of the spy movie. Is her getting the papers, then getting challenged on them at a train station by what looks like a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah. Shows the paper. And it has the incorrect height, so she makes a comment about, must have been wearing my tall boots that day.
I like when he's like, you can't be more than 5 feet tall. It gives us short people hope.
We go back to the slave owner's wife, Eliza, dictating to Gideon, writing a letter about paying off debts to her brother-in-law. Gideon says that they need to sell some slaves, but Eliza's resistant because it's all about status and their social structure and
but
Gideon counters that if they sell some of or all of Harriet's brothers, they can get a couple $1,000.
This is bad news for Harriet because if they get sold, she may never find them again.
Right.
So it's like a time lock in screenwriting. Basically, these guys have fallen on hard times. I also think this is the part where they say the dad died, or maybe I missed that.
No,
that was earlier.
No, that was basically once she prays about it, the next scene you see his coffin going into the ground.
Oh, okay. There's so many coffins.
Yeah.
So Harriet shows up. There's more singing communication.
Mm-hmm.
And she meets, is it with John?
Yep. She meets with John and we see that John has like a scar on his eye and that he can't see out of that eye. And,
but we've also learned that he's moved on pretty fast from Harriet's alleged death.
I mean, okay, well, actually, no, you're right. What?
It's been like 1 year.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, if you live life on the edge, you got to get your love in where you can. It doesn't seem like Harriet holds it against him too much. I mean, she's not totally cool with it, but I got
the exact opposite, feeling that, no, she was definitely torn up about that. Like,
well, somebody makes the argument that's like, hey, go easy. Is it Marie? Someone says that later.
Yeah. She's trying to get John to go with her to Philadelphia, but he says no because I've got a new wife, and not only the new wife, but this new wife is carrying his child, which is what really set off all of this in the first place, because the reason they were doing that legally is to, well, I mean, among many reasons to be free, but you know, the big reason is because they wanted to have a child and they didn't want that child to be born a slave.
Yeah, so basically this woman can give him what Harriet never could. That's gotta hurt.
Ugh. See,
it's not even her fault. Uh-uh. Yeah. But eventually she's like, okay, my brother is going to go with me as well as a few other people.
Well, because she's not even trying to rescue her brothers at this point. She's really just going back for John. And she said she was going to try to get all of them, like basically one at a time.
Mm-hmm. But she ended up having to improvise very much like a spy thing and gets who she can, which ends up being, is it like 7 people?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a lot of people to move.
Yeah.
Again, it's like the Red Sea Diving Resort where it's like, oh my God, you got babies. You got 100 miles to go.
Yep.
Are you kidding me here?
So they go over back to Reverend Green's church. Basically, we're going to wait out the day in this.
It's like literally underground.
Yeah.
It's like the Underground Railroad. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are like 3 more people in there as well. Reverend Green just shrugs his shoulders and says, word got out. And you've inspired more people, basically.
Yeah, I have a note. The legend of Minty. No shade on anyone named Minty, but Harriet Tubman, I think, is kind of a cooler name.
We next go to back to Eliza, who is pissed off that her slaves have run away.
I think it's unintentionally funny. I don't think the movie intended this. I think it's unintentionally funny that Harriet just wants her family back, but in the process is bankrupting these people. Now that they don't deserve it.
Oh, yeah.
It's just funny.
Yeah, so Gideon threatens Rachel, who is Harriet's sister. Her basically, other than her parents, her last remaining family member who's there. Gideon threatens her and like threatens to sell her children unless she tells him, you know, what she knows. Mm-hmm. And Rachel says that Minty, that came for them. When they were going to Reverend Green's church and going around, there was a guy watching them in the field.
Yes, this is the guy with the hat.
Yep.
The guy
who we find out is named Walter.
He was the best character in the movie. Well, I don't know about the best, but he was certainly the most interesting because he was like a Han Solo type, where he's self-interested at first, and then he joins the good guys later. He's got all these cool skills. I liked his hat. It reminded me of the Old Town Road guy's hat.
Okay. But yeah, so Walter, watching them escape, and finds Gideon and tells them which direction they went. And says that he also knows the best slave catcher who's big or long.
Yeah, he's like a bounty hunter slash mercenary slash can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And will do anything if you pay him enough, apparently.
And which we do, I don't even really talk about it, but Walter and Bigger Long are both black. So it's interesting to see these guys working for the system that's oppressing them.
Well, they're self-interested. They can make money off of it, even if it means screwing over other people.
Yeah. Gideon tells Walter to get Bigger Long and meet him at Poplar Neck, where he's gathered a bunch of slave hunters and says he'll give them $300 for all of his escaped slaves, alive and unharmed, and he wants Harriet too. So Harriet and company are running with Bigger and everyone on the slave hunters tracking them. They're setting a trap for them to, you know, they have to go a certain way.
Yeah, but they're not expecting them to go through the river.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what they do.
Yeah, so Harriet has a vision, like, this keeps happening, basically. She keeps having visions that tell her, don't do this or don't do that. And she has a vision of, basically, Gideon trying to kill her. So, and they go in a different direction than the trap. She tells them they have to cross the river. All the escapees, the fugitives, are refusing. There's one in particular, I think his name is Robert, who, like, you know, says, all right, if you drown, who's going to lead us? I'll lead us, and I'll lead us back the other way, the way we're supposed to go. And she pulls the gun on him and says, you know, we're going this way.
She says, now you be free or die. Mm-hmm. It's not my favorite quote, but I did write it down because it seemed pretty significant. Now, this jumped out to me. I don't know if it was intentional, but there is a parallel to this with Judaism. So this is kind of an obscure story, but according to legend, at the crossing of the Red Sea, Moses didn't just click his fingers and the sea just opened like in the movie. Supposedly, the Jews were told, walk in first and have faith that you'll be fine. And the Jews would not do it until one guy named Nachshon Ben Amidav went in, and just as he was about to start drowning, then the seas opened and everyone went too.
Interesting. Okay. Did not
and
know
I feel like if Harriet were around, she would appreciate that analogy because she also compares her people to Jews fleeing Egypt.
Mm-hmm. So she goes through the water and she gets to about halfway when the water is right up to her neck and she prays and, you know, she would know the way to go. And as she keeps moving, the water never goes above her neck. She goes out, gets out on the other side. And as she does, everyone else follows her.
Yeah, she asserts her leadership, gets her people back alive. There is a pretty funny scene where when they walk in the door, or this isn't, that's a little bit later when he falls off his chair. William does, but he is pretty amazed to see them when they all just walk in.
Yeah. Yep. But also Walter goes back to Gideon and says that he lost them. And Gideon like tries to shoot him, but Bigger prevents him, but Bigger still like kicks him and says that you messed up.
Well, he did. He didn't get his people.
So once they cross the river, Harriet asserts her authority, saying, you know, this I'm leading you. We go where I say we'll go.
This is not a committee.
Then they get to Philadelphia and show up at Stowe's office or William's office. And he's, you know, quite surprised and shocked to see, you know, it's 9 people on the first go.
Yeah, to say the least, he's surprised. Yeah.
So Harriet taking a bath and Marie is brushing her hair. And this is where Harriet tells Marie about John remarrying. And this is where what you were talking about earlier is, you know, Marie basically says that she's beyond any man that Marie's ever met.
Yeah, she tells Harriet, you're a strong, independent woman who doesn't need a man. And I don't say that ironically, it's true.
But then also asks her basically what it's like to hear God's voice is what she asks. Mm. And Harriet responds that it's basically like, you know, it's a guiding sense. It's, you know, telling her, you know, which way to go, what to do.
Yeah. Do you believe in a holy voice or is it just intuition? Who can say?
But yeah, so she's walking with William at night and he brings her to this meeting of the committee who are the organizers and officers of the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
So William introduces her, welcomes, you know, tells everyone how great, you know, she did for just on her own and welcomes her as officially as a conductor for the Underground Railroad. And she asks the very important question of what's a conductor? Because, you know, inducted me into this without me really knowing what I'm supposed to be doing.
I interpreted that question more literally. Like she literally didn't know what a conductor does.
I can see both definitely, but told that conductors accompany slaves, or they use the phrase passengers. So a lot of like code phrases here, and they accompanies them to safe houses, or known as stations, which are run by station masters.
Yeah, all we need now is some nuclear weapons called stores, and we'll be good to go.
But then we get a montage set to Nina Simone's Sinner Man. This is great.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite parts of the movie. Yeah, but we see there's a reward for Moses. We get testimonies about how effective she is. We get the part where William falls off his chair, which was, I love some good physical comedy. I think the reward keeps going up, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So at the end of the montage, we have Harriet talking to William, saying that he's asking what's the update on getting Rachel out, because, you know, he said that he could get her out. But then he tells her basically how dangerous it just is because everyone's looking for her. And also, Rachel works like right in the household, so she's even harder to get to.
Classic movie thing where everyone except the main character either can't or won't do anything correctly.
Yeah, they're all looking for her when Harriet counters. No, they're looking for Moses, and they don't know what Moses looks like, so she's going to go back.
Yeah, spy stuff. This is also around the part where she gets her top hat, which I think we see her wearing in the movie poster and the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Harriet is dressed like a man, because I did in top hat and coat and the whole deal, and she sees Rachel in the window, throws a rock at the window to get her to come outside. I find out that Gideon and Eliza took her children, and she says she won't leave without her children.
Now, I feel like if this were a video game, there'd be another level where you have to go get the children. But instead, Harriet just pulls a gun, but it doesn't work because she's like, I'd rather be dead without my children. Reasonably so. So they're going to have to come up with something else.
So she goes and prays in a field. And Walter sneaks up on her and offers his services to help her. I guess he realized, you know, after he got beat up the one time, he realized maybe I shouldn't be doing this.
Or you could think that he plays both sides, so he's always coming out on top.
Yeah.
that's a little bit shady to throw at Walter. He generally seems like he switches sides, and he only switches sides the one time. So
I was wondering, like, I'm not necessarily suspicious, but I was just watching, like, is there going to be a point where he turns on someone for some extra money or something? But
if this were a fictional movie, that absolutely would have happened.
Yeah. So they escape on horseback and leave Maryland. At a meeting in Baltimore, all the slave owners are concerned about Moses. There's actually, you know what this scene reminded me of?
What's that?
It's whenever, like, you have, you know, the police talking about Batman or no, it's not police. No, it's all the thugs, you know, waiting for. I hear he can walk through walls. I hear he can do this.
I hear he's 7 feet tall. Yeah. I hear he can fly.
So, yeah, it's all people are saying, oh, I hear it's, what was it? Yeah, I think, yeah, it was this, let's say it was this, say, I hear he's black as night when they're talking about Moses. Oh, I heard it's one of the white abolitionists in blackface. It's all these rumors going around about, but no one knows who Moses really is.
I don't think anybody thinks she's a woman, certainly. No.
Well, we find out. But also, this is the first, one of the first times we hear about the Fugitive Slave Act. And so all these slave owners are saying that Congress needs to pass this. So Gideon's there. And he meets with Bigger. Bigger tells Gideon that Moses is Harriet. So he's the only one who has found out this information. And so back to Philly, we see a commotion and find out that Congress has passed the Fugitive Slave Act.
Okay, so this was like one of my favorite parts of the movie because it's so scary. It's so, it like shakes everything up. That everything Harriet's built up over the course of the movie is at risk.
Yep.
Okay, so you're like, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen? This is so exciting. What's she gonna do? What's gonna happen now? So that's one reason. The second reason is this the part with John Brown where they're on the docks?
A little bit later.
We're almost there. Okay, so I'll talk about when it happens. Okay,
but we find out more importantly what the Fugitive Slave Act is, and William is like basically on top of a. What's the word?
Like a soapbox?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Warning any fugitives that, you know, slave hunters can now pursue slaves in any state in the Union, and also that the act obliges law enforcement to turn over fugitives.
So basically, they're going to be able to find her anywhere.
Yeah. And so tells them to prepare to go further north, even into Canada. So Harriet trying to find her brothers. William tells her that he put them all on the train.
It's again, really embarrassing that people have to flee America to get to Canada for safety. Because this is 1849. I think they even say the year is 1849 somewhere around here. So 1849 is this year that I know because it's from a song about the Irish potato famine. So at the same time, Irish people are fleeing Ireland to come to America. Black people have to flee America to Canada.
That's right. That's why William says Douglas. And I was like, is that Frederick Douglass?
There was a guy who looked like Frederick Douglass at a couple points in this movie.
It could have been. So they never actually, call him by name. So who knows? It may have been. I know that they did meet at a point, but I didn't remember. Yeah. I don't know if that was supposed to be Frederick Douglass.
I think so.
Yeah. Harriet says she has to go say goodbye to Marie, so can't leave quite yet. Sees that Gideon and his men have barged in and have beaten her. And, you know, she says that she doesn't know where Harriet is, and she gets beaten more, and like everyone leaves except Bigger, who waits around a little bit longer, and she taunts him, and he hits her again, and she collapses.
And she dies. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, once he leaves and Harriet goes to Marie, she dies. It wasn't clear to me that she, like, had just died. Like, I thought she just passed out, and then, oh, no, she's dead.
It was pretty clear to me.
well, I guess because I was watching the stomp happen, and just as someone who's done stage fright, this is my only criticism about the movie. The stomp, you can tell it doesn't hit her at all.
Oh, it doesn't look like a killing blow, in other words.
So and I wasn't even thinking about it. It's just like I saw the stomp, I was like, oh, that doesn't look like that big of a stomp. And then, oh, she's supposed to be dead now. Oh, okay.
Okay. Well, so I was not.
That's my like one thing. I'm like,
it was pretty clear to me that she had died. Yeah. Harriet doesn't need to hold her in her arms and go, no. It's not that kind of.
I mean, it almost gets there. Like, she does basically hold her head in her.
But it's more like sad than like
melodramatic.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this is the dock confrontation.
Yeah.
Did you notice John Brown at this part?
I did not.
So there's a tall white guy standing on the docks with a big gray bushy beard. And
yes,
although
I
they don't
him.
Say his name, that's what John Brown looked like.
Oh,
and
okay.
Harriet Tubman and John Brown did have contact at some point. So what I liked about this part, and just describing it very briefly, Harriet and her friends are trying to escape. Slave hunters are after them. And there's a part where two sides draw guns on each other. So this was really good. It was a small insight. I wish there could have been more of it, of a country coming apart. Because that's not something we see in Civil War movies a lot, is like what it was like before the war really broke out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you read news articles today, supposedly we're on the throes of another civil war. I'm not sure I believe that, but certainly this scene right here was scary and intense and really, really effective.
Yeah, so she runs to the boat and like Gideon like almost shoots her, like sees her and almost shoots her, but someone like knocks his shot. And William gets her on the boat. I noticed he did not get onto the boat. He was, I think he was born a free man, so he doesn't have necessarily any, well, I'm sure he has something to fear from these men, but he cannot be taken away.
Yeah, he's not what they're after, is the point. I think that's something Harriet makes the point to him later, as well as everyone else. That's like, if you're not an ex-slave, you really don't know what it's like. So back off, Jack.
So she sails away. She goes to St. Catharines in Canada. And she has another vision, a vision that Rachel has died, which then she finds out shortly thereafter that Rachel died.
Yep.
Harriet goes to New York to a meeting with William, meets Senator William Seward. A meeting of the committee, and we find out that apparently, they point out that it's 500 miles from the Mason-Dixon line to Canada, and they're trying to figure out how to get passengers to Canada, basically. And one someone says, then you've got to stay and fight, and someone else says, well, you know, we're on the brink of a civil war, we may just have to wait for the war and then have this all happen. And Harriet makes a good speech about how we can't wait for war. And this is, like you said, that this is where she points out that, you know, most of the people who are there who are were freedmen by birth or had been freed so long that they don't remember what it was like.
But this scene is really interesting because everyone has a good point. It's really far. It's really hard. It would involve putting people's lives at risk. And they make the point where they could fight the slave catchers, but if you shoot one of them, it's still considered murder in the United States, and you could still be a wanted. I guess they're all wanted in some ways. But the point is, like, everyone has a good point, and I don't know what to do if I were them. It's a difficult position to be in.
So she wins them all over with her speech.
There's even applause.
We next go to her at the New York Canada border, where she's leading a group. Doesn't say how they managed to do it, but she managed to do it. As she's sleeping, she gets another vision of slave hunters coming. So she packs up like all her stuff, grabs everything, and then but she leaves the photo of William. I was like, was wondering if this is gonna be like, you know, oh, she left that, and now that's proof that William was a part of anything, and that something was gonna happen. But no.
It's not that kind of movie, I guess.
Yeah, no. And I mean, if it was a fictional movie, that'd be exactly what happens.
Yeah, there's lots of moments where you think you can predict it because you've seen fictional movies, but not so much.
Yeah, so we go to Reverend Green's church where he was giving a sermon and then was singing a spiritual. Walter comes to Harriet, who I did not notice because she's wearing this like giant cloak with the
like
hood
a spy.
You don't need to justify it. I think we've justified it.
We justified it by now, but I still appreciate how the spy stuff continues all the way through to the very end.
Yeah. Walter tells Harriet that her father is about to be arrested, and we see that Walter has built her a contraption to bring her mom.
Yeah, it's basically like a cart.
So Harriet goes gets her mom, prizes her from, you know, behind and puts her hand over her mouth.
Right.
Well, we didn't talk about it back, but the first time that Harriet came back to the farm, we find out that her father was able to purchase her mother's freedom. And now the mother lives with her father. Mm-hmm. But her father never told the mother that Harriet was alive.
Yeah, what a dick. But on the other hand, it's kind of like maybe it would have been easier not to know that Harriet's still around. They just can't see each other. But it's his call to make.
Well, I guess the other considerations, I think her father mentioned that the mother wasn't right in the head after she left. And that's...
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? Maybe telling her that her daughter was still alive would help her to come to her senses. Which, hey, it does here, seemingly.
Yeah, it gives her something to live for, too. But basically, she's able to get the parents out and also is able to get her niece out.
Yeah, she gets her niece out when a mob comes to Eliza and Gideon's house. And Eliza's, like, doing terror, like, apparently dying, like, seemingly.
Yeah, this was really good, too. It's really scary that it's like, oh my gosh, now they're getting blamed. Now the mob's after them.
Yeah, Eliza is like refuses to drink her tea because she thinks the slaves are trying to poison her.
Okay, you know what this was like? It was like Game of Thrones. This was reminding me of Game of Thrones. Because in Game of Thrones, if you're rich, it seems great because you have servants. Or if you're in this place where they have slaves, you have slaves. And they do all this stuff for you. But then it's like, you better hope that they're loyal because they could easily spy on you or assassinate you or do any number of things to you. Because there's always other people around, you know?
But yeah, so the mob that came to their house apparently like bring them out into the forest and say that they want restitution because their former slave who has been helping all the other slaves escape and costing these slave owners money. But Eliza makes a good speech and convinces them to join her to catch Moses.
Eliza's like, it's simple. We kill the Batman. She also has some good quotes here. She calls Harry a diabolical, a dangerous wench.
Oh boy.
And says she'll be executed by harshest methods available, which is like,
but yeah,
so
the trap,
over the top.
The trap that they set, so her nephew was set to be sold, and that they knew that she would come to get her nephew.
Yeah.
But as all this is going on, Harriet goes into the house.
Yeah, and she's one step ahead of him.
And gets her niece, whose name is Anger, and like also like ties up seemingly some of the younger kids of the family. As her and William are about to leave, she does her trademark singing that spiritual, which is "Let My People Go," if I recall.
That's right. It's a callback to the Jews from before.
Yeah,
I will say, like a lot of people in these movies, Harriet makes it look easy.
Yeah, basically gets all of the slaves from the house, and so the men have blocked a bridge. Is this the same bridge?
It sure looked like the same bridge.
Right, yeah.
And it would make sense because it's from the same area.
Sure. So the fugitive, who was not from, you know, Gideon and Eliza's house, is on top of the cart and is posing as her owner. And
yeah,
so,
this
like,
was
everyone
crazy.
Else is inside, like in a hidden compartment, like getting people across the Berlin Wall in a Trabant. They're in a hidden compartment inside this cart full of corn. Inside the compartment, like Harriet's speaking to the fugitive and says, you know your master better than anyone. Be him. Pretend to be him. So she has Walter's clothes on. Disguises a man.
She basically bluffs him out. Yeah. So this part was ridiculous because to me, she looked... Yeah. It very clearly looked like a woman dressed up as a man.
That, yes.
And that she was like mixed race. But then later they explain it because they're like, oh, none of these guys actually know what he looks like or sounds like. So again, it's more in how you like present yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also wonder if some of it was dumbed down for the audience so the audience could figure out what was going on.
Maybe. But yeah, so she bluffs her way through. It only occurred to me when you see Walter in women's clothes that they had swapped clothes, and that's whose clothes she was in.
Ah, I see.
If you see Walter in, like, the bonnet and the dress, I was like, oh, that's where those clothes came from.
I guess they didn't just want to leave Walter in his underwear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'd probably be cold.
Brr.
But as they go past, Gideon and Bigger figure out that the fugitives were in the wagon. Harriet tells her mother that Senator Seward sold her a bunch of land that can hold their whole family. And then we don't get a vision here, but we see her sense that men are coming.
I don't think you need precognitive dreams to know that men are coming after you. It feels like they have been.
Yeah, but she has that sixth sense. And like Walter comes with a boat and she gets everyone on the boat and tells Walter to bring her family to safety.
Yeah, she's like, you guys go and I'll hold them off. Yeah. It's like that.
So Gideon and Bigger find Harriet. She leads them in the opposite direction of the boat. You know, she climbs up onto a rock wall. Gideon told Bigger, I want her alive.
Yeah, and Bigger seals his own death warrant. He says, maybe you can get some alone time with her, wink, wink. I was like, you piece of shit. You better fucking die.
Yeah. Bigger tries to kill Harriet. See a bunch of shots. And then we hear one more shot, but then he falls over. My first instinct was Walter came back and to help her.
That was your first instinct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't expect Gideon to kill Bigger.
I didn't expect it, but once he died, I was kind of like, well, Harriet, our hero is not going to shoot him. Mm-hmm. And they did set it up by having Gideon say, I want her alive. Okay. So yeah, if Bigger's shooting, then yeah.
It surprised me. But then, yeah, once I remember, and then he repeats that, you know, I said I wanted her alive. So Harriet gets Gideon at gunpoint, tells him to drop the gun. He doesn't. So she shoots him in the hand.
Hell yeah.
And somehow predicts where he's going to die and in what circumstances.
No. Okay, so let's talk about this speech. So I liked the beginning when she was like, there's going to be a war. You're going to fight in it and you're probably going to die. And I'm not going to kill you here. This war that you fuckers started is going to kill you. So that was great. I really liked that. But then she just keeps talking about how like slavery is bad, which the audience already knows, and he's not going to be convinced to it. So that didn't work for me. I think the idea of this scene is supposed to be like a fist pumping, like rah rah, like you go, Harriet, you tell him, you give him what for. But I felt like less is more would have worked better. Yeah. IMO.
Well, I mean, just the very specificness of it made me think that she was like prophesizing how he was going to die.
Yeah, I didn't take it that specifically.
I mean, well, with everything else going on in this movie, with her getting visions from God telling her which way to go, I don't think it's that far of a stretch.
Has she been wrong yet? I don't think so.
No.
I also felt like he got off too easy. Like, she let him live. This dude killed Marie, basically. I mean, he might not have been the one to do it. She basically facilitated it. Like, just a shot in the hand. You could at least shot him in, like, the leg, but not our hero.
But she leaves him alive. And we next go to 2 years into the Civil War.
Yeah.
Where Harriet is speaking to a regiment of Black Union soldiers, giving this big motivational speech. Mm-hmm. And then we next see the next morning where they're in boats with all the other soldiers, as well as ironclads, which is a thing you don't see often. I always think it's cool to see when you see ironclads.
That was freaking sweet. Like, it was a shot of like behind them is a couple and there's like fire in the background. And I was like, hell yeah.
So they're facing the riverbank or the, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a riverbank.
Mm-hmm. Could ironclads go in rivers?
Yup.
Okay. Yeah. So a bunch of escaped slaves are running towards them. All the Union soldiers get ready to fire. And then we get to our title cards, basically.
I was like, haha, those dudes are about to get fucked up. And then the movie ended.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit disappointing, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
we get some end titles. We learn that Harriet later remarried.
Not only that, we also find out about this particular raid that we saw the beginning of. Tubman alone got 70 slaves to freedom. But with this raid, with the Union Army, she got freed over 750 in this one raid alone.
Yeah, so the IMDb description that says she freed hundreds of people is correct.
Yep. And then also we get some information that apparently she became a spy for the Union Army.
Yeah, where was that in the movie?
I was hoping we'd see more of that, but there is enough spy content here to, I think, justify us covering it.
Ready to get into spy fact versus fiction?
Sure.
All right, here we go. There's a lot of myths about Harriet Tubman's life. We're just focusing on the movie, though.
Okay.
The sources are the New York Times, Harriet Tubman, Facts and Myths, How the Movie Tried to Get It Right. Slate, What's Fact and What's Fiction in Harriet, and Army.mil, Harriet Tubman, Nurse, Spy, Scout. The movie was generally accurate, except for where it wasn't. So,
that's a statement.
But like, I would say like 75% of it was pretty good.
Okay. All right.
So there's a few details that are different. She took the name Harriet Tubman after she reached freedom in the movie, but really it was after she was married. But she took it from the same people. The lawyer is correct. The lawyer determined that Tubman's mother, like her father, should have been liberated at the age of 45. But the will stipulated that Harriet and her siblings would be freed when they were 45. Not the mom.
Gotcha.
So Harriet really did pray for the death of her master. She admitted that in one of her biographies, but she wasn't sold for that reason. The reality is they were going to sell her, but it was just to pay off debts as usual. Gideon is basically entirely fictional and everything about him was fictional. So I know that's kind of a lot.
Okay. Yeah.
So that big confrontation in the end, fictional too. The Broaduses did have a son, but his name was Jonathan, and we don't know a whole lot about him.
Oh, okay.
Marie Buchanan was also fictional, though people like her probably did exist, or could have existed, but the point is she did not specifically.
Okay.
By 1861, Harriet's reputation was widespread, and she operated during the winter when the nights were long and people stayed indoors. That makes it a lot easier. And she also made her return trips with the escapees on Saturdays because the paper doesn't print notices until Monday, giving her a couple days head start.
All right.
An activist in the Freedmen's Aid Society wrote of her in 1865, quote, "She has needed disguises so often that she seems to have command over her face and can banish all expression from her features and look so stupid that nobody would suspect her of knowing enough to be dangerous, but her eye flashes with intelligence and power when she is roused." Other things, the timelines were conflated, like the Fugitive Slave Act was passed within months after her first escape, not later.
Gotcha.
While it's true that John did remarry while Harriet was gone, her trip where she met him was not her first rescue.
Okay.
She rescued her niece and her niece's two children before going to see John. It is true that she would pull guns on people and be like, "You're going to learn of our freeways by force." She did not come up with the saying "live free or die," which is the official motto of the U.S. state of New Hampshire.
I never attempted like it.
Well, I thought it would have been kind of cool if the New Hampshire state motto came from Harriet Tubman, but instead it came from General John Stark, New Hampshire's most famous soldier of the Revolutionary War.
Well, that's predated her then.
Right. And then finally, there's no evidence that the Brodesses hired a slave catcher, but according to the historians in the articles, it's not impossible but fairly unlikely that such a person would have been black. Like, they might have existed, but it'd be like one in 100 people.
Sure. Yeah. So should we go to our favorite quotes?
Sure. Would you like to go first?
Actually, yeah, I'll go first. I liked when she's making her big speech to the committee and she says, "You've been free so long you forget what it's like."
I
also just like Walter when he's, you know, as they're getting all the slaves from the what is their family's name?
Burgesses or Burdesses or something Brodus, like that?
Brodus, yeah, from the Brodus farm. He keeps saying, you know, "We're gonna need a bigger cart," and then "We're definitely gonna need a bigger cart." I just enjoy it. Yeah.
There's some dry humor.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate, yeah.
Yeah. And last, I just like, you know, her catchphrase, you know, "I'm gonna be free or die."
Yeah. Very often repeated. There's a part where she goes to see William and he's like, "How'd you get so many people back?" And she says, "I went down south and brought them back." Like, very matter of factly. I can't deliver it as well as she can, but she was good. I like the part where Walter says, "You talk to God and it seems he talks back. Maybe you could introduce us." It seems like the kind of thing Captain Malcolm Reynolds would say. And then the last favorite line is, she goes to see her dad right at the beginning. She's going to escape. She says, "Goodbye, Dad. I love you." Runs away. And then there's like a 3-second pause, and then he says quietly, "I love you too," which felt very real, especially a man saying that. A man of the time is not good at expressing emotions. It felt real, which I always like to see in movies. All right, so now it is time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis, 1 being Avengers 1998 and 10 being we liked it even more than Lance liked No Time to Die, which is our currently highest rated movie.
That's right. Yeah.
So how would we rate Harriet? So there were parts of this movie that I thought were really quite brilliant. I really liked the montage. I really liked the confrontation at the boat. But taken as a whole, I found it to be pretty slow. Like I said, Harriet makes it look easy. So it's similar to Mo Berg and The Catcher Was a Spy, where Harriet's a really interesting person. But when you try to adapt it into a movie, it's tough. I also was a little bit disappointed that we didn't get a lot of the Civil War things. But on the other hand, it is very accurate, and there is a lot to like, so I will give it 6.5 martinis.
All right. As a movie, I really enjoyed it, but you know, we are a spy movie podcast, and yes, there's some spying in here, but I will be honest, I was really expecting it to be more of the, the Civil War, you know, Union spy stuff, so all we got of that was a little title card at the end. I was disappointed, but you know, like we've said throughout, that there is, you know, her, like, I liked the use of code phrases, or even just the song as basically a and I know that this is the thing about African American spirituals, is that a lot of the songs had like coded messages inside them, which I always thought was cool. So just seeing the use of them here, and that what, you know, a song, like when she goes say goodbye to her mother, and she's just singing a song, but you know, everyone knows that that's I'm leaving and I'm going.
Yeah, I forgot to mention this, but at least when she left her mother, that singing was accurate.
Ah, okay.
So that really did happen.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. It was good. Wasn't the best spy movie ever, but it was still a good movie.
Yeah. So next week we will be doing more about Harriet Tubman's Civil War career in a micro dot episode. And then in 2 weeks, we will be doing another Harriet movie, Harriet the Spy.
Oh boy. This is your idea.
It's fun. We like to have fun here.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us. As always, you can find us on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Until next time, I'm Christian.
And I'm Zach.
And we are The Spy-Fi Guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to The Spy-Fi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.